practically nothing that would compel me to eat the food of the spirit world and risk an eternity of servitude to you, Baba, lest I be turned into a swine and eaten. Well, practically nothing. But I am a sucker for a great cup of coffee. And if you love coffee, then you know that the secret to making the best cup of coffee is starting with freshly roasted beans. But how does one ensure that the coffee they're buying is freshly roasted? Well, the internet is here to solve that problem with Sparkplug Coffee. Sparkplug starts with premium Arabica beans that have been directly sourced and fairly traded. They offer blends and roasts to suit any taste, including decaf and half-caf. But best of all, Sparkplug delivers this delicious coffee to your home or office within a week of custom roasting it here in Toronto so that it's always fresh and at its peak flavor. You will taste the difference. Sparkplug even offers autopilot set it and forget it delivery so that while you may forget your own name, you'll never have to worry about forgetting to order coffee. It's time for your favorite cup to start coming from your own kitchen. So plug yourself in at sparkplugcoffee.com. And action.
Hi there, movie friends, and thanks a lot for downloading the Next 100 Project, the ongoing movie reviews podcast that wasn't satisfied with chronicling the 123 American Film Institute Top 100 Movies. We warn you right now that we are the kinds of people who spoil movies. My name is Ryan Ellis, and with me as always is my extraordinary wife, Bev.
That's me.
As you can tell by our voices right off the bat here, we're both battling colds. So maybe this won't be the longest podcast of all time, and we're going to sound a little froggy and awful. The coming attraction trivia for this week's picture, Spirited Away. Between Shrek, Finding Nemo, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, Inside Out, The Lion King, and Spirited Away, which film has the best score on Rotten Tomatoes, which is the biggest U.S. hit adjusted for inflation, and which is the highest ranked on the Internet Movie Database?
So when you first asked me the question, I assumed that it would be like one film to rule them all, but no, it was different for each one of them. So first, the biggest box office hit adjusted for inflation will probably always be Snow White. Mm-hmm. Which is, adjusted for inflation, is like nearing a billion, I think.
It's in the top 10 all time.
Oh, yeah, exactly. It's a massively successful film. Best rated on Rotten Tomatoes with 99% was Finding Nemo, which surprised me a little bit.
Inside Out's right behind it, and so is Snow White at 98. And
yeah.
God knows people could look this up, and it could be different by the time they hear this podcast. Spirited Away is at 97%. But as of now, it is Nemo.
And Spirited Away is represented here because it is the highest rated on IMDb with, I think it was 8.6.
And it's, where is it here? 29th. And that's quite a ways ahead of the next two. Lion King and WALL-E are a long way back. They're also pretty highly ranked, but they're not even that close to Spirited Away. All right, good job. The Next 100 Project's 48th flickering picture, Spirited Away, first hit screens in Japan in July 2001. Then America got to see it in September 2002. So that makes this nearly the 15-year anniversary. Not so much over here, but Spirited Away broke records in its native Japan. It even topped Titanic.
Yeah.
And that's saying a lot. Well, Bev, explain the film with the skinny.
A young Japanese girl named Chihiro enters a magical world when her parents are transformed into pigs. She finds work at a bathhouse and works hard, making lots of friends in the process. Her strange odyssey takes her back to reality. And if that explained much of anything, then you're smarter than we are.
You nutshelled that pretty well, because it doesn't really explain much at all, does it? Well, I'll explain even less by saying, in a nutshell, working in a bathhouse is surprisingly unsexy.
And then some.
I guess it ought to be, considering it's mostly kids. Well, then again, our main character is a kid. I guess it's not mostly kids. In fact, she's the only kid, along with Haku, that isn't even in that bathhouse, isn't
she? Yeah, and they keep saying that she's the only human, even though Haku, and I can't remember the name
Haku's
of...
Haku's a dragon.
Well, Haku's a dragon who looks like a person most of the time, and then the girl who kind of shows her around...
Lin
looks very much like a human, but is apparently not.
Well, they are in the spirit world, so none of them are really actually humans anyway. We covered the Rotten Tomatoes numbers a minute ago, 97%, 96% of audiences, 29th on the IMDb 250. But also, it was on BBC Culture's Top 100 of the Century list, if you remember that when we talked about that with Mulholland Drive. Spirited Away was number 4 on that list, and it's one of 4 non-USA flicks in the top 10. And it was 150th at the 2002 US box office and made about $10 million, not nearly as much as Spider-Man from that year, which was number 1. But Wikipedia says it grossed $289 million worldwide, and $250 million of that in Japan. The name in their proper language of this film is, I hope to say this right, Sen to Chihiro no Kamakakushi. I think I got that, didn't I?
Sure. Don't ask me.
And because we don't really know the Japanese actors who voiced the characters in the original Japanese language, we're going to talk only about the American actors. John Lasseter supervised the American dub, and he used some of the people he's used before, including John Ratzenberger has a small role, as he does in every single Pixar movie. Not that this is Pixar, but Lasseter, of course, is the Pixar guy. Anyway, what do you think of the movie, Bev? You chose it. You must like it.
Yeah, I mean, I think this movie's amazing. I wouldn't dare pretend that I have some keen understanding of it. I don't think many people would, but I can say how Spirited Away makes me feel, and that is dazzled and warm and truly like a kid again. And I can think of few films I've seen in my life that have marveled me the way Spirited Away does. But the visual accomplishment is nothing without this really significant emotional impact.
Any tears shed there? I didn't notice.
No. It's less a film that moves you like that, and more, even though it's such an alien thing, I feel this tremendous empathy for Chihiro in the film, and there's this strange familiarity. Do you understand what I'm saying? That there's something about it, even though it's so strange, it somehow feels really accessible.
I do know what you're saying, and most animated films have children at the core. They're the leaders. You know, a child will lead them, as that old saying goes. But rarely, even now, are girls the main characters in a movie like this, and she's in, I think, every single scene.
But you know what's funny is everyone compares Spirited Away to Alice in Wonderland and Wizard of Oz. I was actually trying to think of a film that is in that family of films, which is an innocent goes to a strange, bizarre land. And I can't think of one off the top of my head where the character's a boy. I mean, you might say Peter Pan, but actually Peter Pan is the guide and Wendy is the one that goes to Neverland as the innocent to kind of be like the cipher for the audience. Can you think of an example of a boy? So even though we say, oh yes, it's really quite unusual for girls to be leads in animated films. Although even that being said, princesses are very often. But when it's an adventure, I guess. And because she has such a great arc.
Yeah.
You know, she goes in there, a little kid who's afraid and who's whiny and
very whiny,
comes out a boss. You know, she saves her parents and she manages that world. And, you know, and maybe this is a Japanese thing, but she becomes a hard and competent worker. And that
can I have a job? Yeah. Can I have a job? Can I have a job?
Yeah, and she does exactly what she has to do, even though she's bad at first. She learns and she gets better. Her big turnaround in the film is that amazing scene where the stink
spirit... My favorite scene in the movie.
It's a great scene. Yeah, the stink spirit comes in and everyone's afraid to deal with him because he smells so bad. So they make her do it because she's the new girl. And she just does it. And she screws up, but she just keeps persisting, keeps at it. And then eventually, just trying to help the client, trying to do her job well, discovers that the stink spirit is a river spirit that's been filled with pollutants. In an attempt to make the spirit more comfortable, she ends up pulling all this garbage out of him and making him well again. And that's a huge turnaround for her. You know, prior to that, she's afraid of everything. And after that, she seems to have this enormous confidence in everything she does.
I love that scene. And I think one of the reasons why I do is that you don't know that it's going the way it's going to go. Because it does become didactic. And right on the nose with the whole notion, we shouldn't be polluting the rivers. Look what happens when you pollute the rivers. And I read online that the director, Hayao Miyazaki, he actually participated in a river cleanup. And they found things like bicycles deep in this river. So that's one reason why there's a bike that she pulls out of the stink spirit's baggage, if you will. But it starts out being mystical and strange. That scene does. I mean, the whole movie does. But that scene is weird. You don't know where it's going. And then you realize in the end, that was a beautiful little vignette. But it actually had a message to tell, and I don't really mind that it was so preachy.
And it is a kid's film, so you're going to forgive if it does some things on the nose, but most things are not on the nose. That's actually probably one of the few examples of where it's really very obvious. Another thing that's very obvious is the message in the film that capitalism and greed, specifically greed, is bad. All the greedy characters are empty, they're evil. The not-so-greedy characters who are just happy with their life the way they are, which like there are a few. There's her and what's Yubaba's twin's name again?
Zaniba,
okay, yeah, she's also not particularly greedy. She seems to be happy and be a good person as well. But over and over, there's examples of where greed is harmful and selfish and bad.
Or gluttony, you know. Her parents.
Yes, oh, yeah, into definitely, pigs. Yeah.
By eating too much food.
Many have pointed out that at the time this film was made, it was shortly after Japan was in a terrible recession and had been for about a decade. There was a lot of decadence in the 90s when the economy was good in Japan and a lot of people got very rich off Western money. you see, it's probably hard to see if you're Western to notice things like the car her parents is driving is a German car. It's an Audi. They're dressed in Western clothes. Her mother has a Western hairstyle. And Yubaba, her apartment and her clothing, all this Western style of wealth and of showing their wealth. And not that Miyazaki is letting traditional Japanese culture off the hook either, but when it comes to greed, he definitely is making an association with the West's influence on Japan.
And I think Mr. Pink is right. Tipping is bad. Mr. Pink from Reservoir Dogs.
Look what happened in this film.
Well, the ones that get tipped by the dirty spirit get swallowed up by him, by the stinkster.
Not all of them, but some of them do.
Also, the spirit who can make gold. That's not the same spirit as the stink spirit. Chihiro can't be tempted by food or by the gold from this guy. I guess she's a good-hearted character. But the other ones, as I say, get swallowed up. Literally eaten, in fact.
She's tempted with the tickets, the bath tickets, because she lost the one that she needed to do her job well, so she's tempted by him helping her do her job properly.
But for the right reason, then.
Sure.
She's pretty incorruptible otherwise. Unlike her parents, it's the first scene in the movie, or one of the first scenes at least, where they're eating this food that doesn't belong to them. And again, not very subtle.
Well, they turn into pigs, yeah. Yes.
They had no idea what went on, all the stuff they missed. But then again, maybe this is just a fever dream for the kid anyway. Well, in that opening sequence, when the father's driving like a maniac, he takes one wrong turn. He also demands that they explore this magical world. They don't really know it's magical at the time, but we've got to go in there. And Chihiro's the one saying, no, 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 no. It's all about what he wants to do. And when he's driving them, he's a maniac.
I know. It's so weird. She's clearly scared. She got no seatbelt on in the back seat. Like you already mentioned, it's unusual for an adventure film to have a female hero. It's not just that. They repeatedly ignore her. She tells them, we shouldn't take the shortcut. She tells them, we shouldn't go to the abandoned amusement park. You shouldn't eat the food. You shouldn't do this. She's right every single time. Mm. And they ignore her every single time. And I think there's a warning there of ignoring the voice of a young girl.
But then you could argue she really should have gone into the spirit world because she did end up helping out Haku to be what he really is, remembering his name and knowing that he's actually a dragon who can fly. And who doesn't want to fly in a dragon? Game of Thrones has shown us that that's awesome.
And speaking of female characters in film, the villain is also a woman, Yubaba. Again, kind of like Alice in Wonderland and Wizard of Oz, the villain is like a matriarchal witch, right? Yubaba, she's not necessarily a witch, she's kind of more like a bad boss. She's incredibly powerful, both magically and with money, and she's incredibly cruel as well.
To make you forget your own name. And you get that iconic imagery of the giant witch heads, because Zaniba also, I mean, it's a twin, they look exactly the same. The enormous baby that then becomes the little, tiny baby.
Oh my god, Aaron, like one of the most delightful visual images that
and
this film has.
And this wasn't a Disney movie, but you've got the Disney cliche. Not even necessarily am I criticizing by calling it a cliche, but the adorable sidekicks.
Oh, they're so adorable.
And it isn't until the end you see those sidekicks, though. In a Disney movie, typically the sidekicks are all the way through.
And another sweet thing about Chihiro as a character is how she doesn't seem to hold a grudge against anybody ever. She could easily hold a grudge against it's the baby, and who turns into the little fly thing? The eagle, like Yubaba's pet bird, the little bird that carries around the gerbil that was the baby. Oh, even as you say this out loud, it's like a fever dream, right?
Mm. Okay, but the bouncing heads.
Yeah, you turn into the baby that becomes like, God, it's so weird. This is so hard to describe to somebody, and I hope everyone listening to someone has seen it recently enough that this doesn't just sound like nonsense.
There's more bizarre creatures here than anything you're going to see in Star Wars, I would say.
Yeah.
I mean, or, they actually have more bizarre creatures in Star Wars, but pound for pound, it's pretty close.
Or just about any movie that you've ever seen. I can't think of another movie ever, and part of the genius of Spirited Away is that every inch of it is jam-packed with Miyazaki's incredible imagination. It is a masterpiece of creativity.
The guy even makes annoying little dust bunnies cute.
Yes, the motes of dust that are animated and have little personalities. And this little scene that's just there for no reason except to delight us, where they trick her into carrying the coal for them. Mm-hmm. And everything, every inch you look at, the animation is beautiful. It's not quite as fluid as, say, Disney animation. I don't think it's 24 frames a second. But each drawing and each creature and each setting is such a painting. Like, it's just so breathtakingly gorgeous. And there's so much attention to detail in every single creature. There's all these spirits. Some of them get names. Lots of them don't, but they each have this unbelievably unique presentation. There's a demon that's just one big nose, and there's a demon that kind of looks like a demented rubber ducky. They're everywhere, and they're just things that you could never have imagined yourself. Roger Ebert, in his review, he talks about when Chihiro goes to visit Zeniba, the twin, the good witch. When she gets to the edge of her property, there's an animated lamppost that hops over, greets her, motions her to follow him, and it hops, hops, hops to the house. As Ebert puts it, there's no reason for that lamppost to do what it does. It's a gift from Miyazaki to us, to delight us.
Well, that last sequence, the watery ghost train, the spirits on that train, that's both inspirational and also a bit horrifying. Could easily be a horror movie, this one could.
Since you talk about the train, that's a great example of something that a lot of people point out about, well, Japanese film, and I think particularly anime and particularly Miyazaki, is this concept of something called ma, which is translated as a breath, a break, a film that instead of in a typical Disney film or any film made for kids and any film made by Hollywood, it has to be bang, bang, nonstop action and things going on, but Japanese films like to take breaths, even though it's a kid's film, like you can trust that they will still have attention to pay, even if there's just a couple of minutes where we sit with our characters and contemplate what's happening and what's about to happen and just kind of enjoy the scenery. The best example of that in this film is the train trip that you describe. It's a world in and of itself where there's these dark spirits that are really creepy, but because Chihiro's not afraid, we're not afraid, and she's there with a no face who just minutes prior was eating people whole and is massive, so creepy that his mouth isn't even part of his faux face. Mm-hmm. And this creepy character that Chihiro holds no grudges against like everybody else because she's just such a good spirit herself. No face and Chihiro and Chihiro's little traveling companions, the gerbil and the bird, are just on this train and they're traveling through this world and you just sit with them. 3 minutes the sequence goes on and it's not boring. And so much has happened, and so much is about to happen, that you do kind of appreciate this pause to take it all in. You don't need plot, and you don't need character development. You just enjoy the quiet.
Well, unlike a lot of American animated movies, including some of the Pixar stuff, maybe all the Pixar stuff, this one doesn't feel the need to be all action, doesn't feel the need to be all plot. I guess actually, maybe Pixar's not bad for that. I remember Shark Tale, which came out a couple years after this, was one that was lampooned by a lot of people. DreamWorks did that. That wasn't, of course, Pixar or Disney or anybody. And I didn't hate that movie, but I didn't like it either. And I think I probably related to a lot of people were saying, which is it's just damn, zam, 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 modern famous people that were doing the voices, but also these modern references. And then the thing is just nonstop, and it doesn't need to be. Mm-hmm. Contemplative moments like this can work even for kids if you do it right. Now, maybe kids aren't going to like Spirited Away as much as Pixar's best stuff or Disney's best stuff. But if you sat a kid down and watched this, some would hate it. I bet a surprising amount would love it.
It couldn't have made as much money as it did unless kids enjoyed it. It is a children's movie. And Miyazaki said when talking about this film, he's like, people really underestimate children. If you stay true to feelings, then you don't have to have violence and constant action. They'll follow you if the emotions are there to draw them in.
He also does some nice things that are not, again, very subtle, but not blatantly in your face either, like, say, Shark Tale was. When you work for Yubaba, you forget your name, and I think that's supposed to be a metaphor for losing your identity in the workforce. You don't know who you are anymore. In this case, with this movie, you literally don't know who you are anymore.
And when she changes her name from Chihiro to Sen. Mm-hmm. So Chihiro, the name means 1,000 questions, but Sen just means 1,000. So she goes from having a name that would imply learning and depth to a name that is strictly just a value. Of course, a capitalist would give her a name that is just a number. When she gets her name back at the end of the movie, she is kind of a different person. She's transformed. She goes back to her old name, of course, but transformation is clearly a theme in the film. Chihiro is one of the only characters that doesn't have an alternate form that she can take. Mm-hmm. Yubaba becomes a bird. Haku becomes a dragon, right? They change in front of you. Transformation is everywhere. And Chihiro transforms, but emotionally. And the name change is part of that. Mm-hmm.
Another fun touch by Miyazaki is that for a witch with incredible power, Yubaba is pretty obsessed with contracts. She makes her sign a contract and she's got to follow it to the letter of the law.
The contracts kind of have magical properties.
Well, it's kind of like the thing in The Omen where the devil has got to follow all these rules to make things happen with Damien. Why does the devil need to follow rules? And who wrote these rules? Who's enforcing these rules?
It's convenient for movie language.
Exactly, that's what it is, isn't it? One thing I could have done for the nutshell is to say this. She families up with a ghost, a dragon, a good witch, a giant baby, and a dust mote. And that's, of course, Miyazaki's talent for having those things work in a movie. We'll get to him in a minute, but I want to ask one more question before we get to him. And I touched on it a few minutes ago. Is everything from the moment that she and her parents stop the car and investigate and eat all the food and so on, until the very end, when the parents are normal again, just imagination? Which, of course, could be asked about Alice in Wonderland and Wizard of Oz. Wizard of Oz was a dream. And you were there, and you were there. But, question is out there. Do you think Spirited Away is saying that none of that really happened, and she just had some kind of fever dream that lasted seconds, but now she's a changed person?
I have an answer for that. The answer is clear, because when they get back to the car, it's covered in growth. Things are different when they get back to the car because they've been there for however long. For all we know, when Chihiro's dad gets to his new job, they're going to be like, where have you been?
You're fired.
You're fired already. You were supposed to be here a week ago. In the movie's language, they are clearly saying this absolutely happened. Okay. Just their parents don't remember it.
Yeah, I guess I won't argue with them then. Okay, this one's actually saying it was real. Now, why can't it be real? That's Miyazaki's thing. He's done movies like My Neighbor Totoro and Princess Mononoke, which you almost chose in this slot instead, and that would have been a good choice. I've only ever seen that once and don't remember it at all, but I know it was very good.
When Princess Mononoke came out, I was really, really into it, and I bought it, and I watched it many times. And then I think by the time Spirited Away came out, it had a little bit of Miyazaki overkill. But I remember over the years thinking about both movies, that Spirited Away was the one that left me with the bigger impression, especially emotionally. So that's why it's the movie I chose. Also because I think critically, just about everybody agrees it's the better film. Princess Mononoke is a great movie with tons of beautiful details. A really beautiful film that I would recommend to anybody. But Spirited Away is just, I don't know, this next level. There's something so magical and rare about it.
And he planned to retire after Princess Mononoke, but he kept on going and made at least two movies later. What's that one called? Castle in the Sky? Howl's Moving Castle. And I think there may be one other one in there, but at the very least, he made two more after Princess.
And if anybody listening is a super fan, I apologize, because I know he has some really devoted fans, as he should. He's a rare artist.
Artist, all right. He drew his own storyboards.
Wow.
That is not common for animation directors. It's one thing to be in charge of it, and maybe draw some of them, but he drew, I guess, all of them.
It's a task.
And he didn't work with scripts, so the story was told in the storyboard process, which is also a gamble.
Yeah, wow.
A very big gamble.
Yeah.
And they did use computers, but primarily this was traditional hand-drawn, so I don't know how many hours he would spend every day drawing. But it must have been nonstop.
And animators have talked about how some of the scenes, particularly in the bathhouse where you have all those creatures, most animators would use shortcuts. But anybody who knows what they're talking about is amazed at how much he didn't. Like, he drew every single one of those creatures. There's no copying. There's no looped backgrounds that they're using to just save time. There's a ton of detail. And that detail's drawn in every one of those frames. It's a huge amount of work. And it pays off in this really visually dense film.
Well, he and his crew worked quickly. They didn't start production until 2000, and as I said, it came out in Japan in 2001.
Mm.
That's a pretty fast turnaround, especially when you got a guy drawing so many storyboards. Maybe that information isn't quite accurate. He probably had people helping him with that. But if he was even just drawing a lot of them, or half of them, that'd be remarkable.
It's pretty clear that he's an auteur and he is in charge of his vision, because his vision is incredibly strong and consistent from one film to the next.
And he'll go down as one of the great filmmakers of all time, not just animation and not just foreign filmmaker, a Japanese guy. It'll be just talk about all the greats of all time. And of course, you could talk about thousands probably. Who are the greatest 50 directors of all time? Would he make that list? No. But then for some people, he probably would.
And another thing I'll say about him as an auteur, as an artist, as one of the greatest directors, a title like that can easily make a film seem inaccessible. And I think there's a great deal of movie viewing public that would hear, oh, it's Japanese, it's an auteur film, and use that as a reason to avoid it. But one of the reviews I read described his work as artful without being arty.
Yeah.
That he has this way of creating something that's so one of a kind and truly some of the greatest art that exists in this century. And yet it feels incredibly accessible. I don't think there's anything alienating about it. There's nothing arrogant about it.
You know what I'm thinking about right now is Terrence Malick. I just heard about Knight of Cups. I never even knew it existed. It's almost been a year that it was out. But he's made movies like The New World, which was beautiful looking. That was arty.
Yeah, it's a type of film that you watch and a lot of people are like, well, I guess I don't get it. Does that mean I'm not smart enough? Thin Red Line, also Tree of Life, which I know a lot of people loved, but oh my god. Again, beautiful, but I just couldn't get behind it, I guess.
But Miyazaki doesn't do that.
Somehow, it's not there for you to admire, it's there to wash over you. Mm-hmm. And it's really welcoming and warm. I don't know how else to describe it. You really have to see it for yourself, and I can't recommend it highly enough. It seems like it should be such a hard sell to people that don't typically like foreign films or animation or anime.
It helps when you're watching the English dub, because yeah, you're really not having to watch subtitles. And I've watched, I think, one time. Yeah, when I got the DVD, I watched the Japanese dub one time. So I've seen it three times with the American actors. DeVay Chase is Chihiro. Suzanne Plachette is Yubaba. David Ogden Stiers is Kamaji, the spider guy in the laundry.
Yeah, yeah.
Lauren Hawley and Michael Chiklis are her parents. John Ratzenberger has a small role because he always does in a Pixar thing, even though this isn't a Pixar movie. Now, about Chihiro, she's 10 years old. The word sullen comes up a lot in online descriptions. DeVay Chase, in a span of 2 years, played Samantha Darko in Donnie Darko, Lilo in Lilo and Stitch, she voiced that role, Samara in The Ring, and then Chihiro in Spirited Away.
What's so some pretty dark parts in there for
and
a little girl.
And a great run for a little girl, yeah. But I don't think she's done that much since. I haven't heard her name in quite a long time. And those voices, Chase, Plachette, Stiers, Hawley, Chiklis, Ratzenberger, John Lasseter hired all of them to do the English dub. They tried to match the English words they would use to the Japanese animation. So maybe sometimes the spirit is not quite exactly right. It must not be, because you're going to have to find words that don't fit what should have been said in there. And maybe that's also why there's some unnecessary dialogue and talking to themselves a little bit too much. She does that fairly often. That's probably just to cover the Japanese language gaps.
The script isn't the best thing about the film.
No.
There's nothing about the language that's particularly fluid or inspiring. It's really a visual film.
As far as the behind the scenes, people talk about them a little bit here. Toshio Suzuki was one of the producers. Cinematographer was Atsushi Okui. Editor was Takeshi Sayama. And the music score, which was very nice, Joe Hisashi. And of course the film is 185:1 and we watched the DVD. And again, with respect to the Japanese actors, I mean, to not mention them, but I don't know who any of them are, and I don't think anyone else who listens to our podcast likely does either. Unless we have a lot of Japanese fans. If we do, hey, how's it going?
Hi!
All right, so the influence of Spirited Away. It's a culmination of all of Miyazaki's work, like Vertigo for Hitchcock, I've always said. That's the one that represents him the best. E.T. for Spielberg. Doesn't mean it's their best film, but it's the one that represents them the best. In this case, it's probably both the guy's best film and the one that represents who he is the best. Because you do see similar, not the same, but similar characters, the look of them at least, in some of his other films. Like in My Neighbor Totoro.
Mm-hmm.
They have their own Big Baby, which beat out Toy Story 3's own version of Big Baby about 8 years later. And Big Baby's a supporting player in both movies, but this one is maybe even more scary. And that one's definitely a bad guy for a long time.
It's creepy, but then he ends up being like a friend in both cases.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess this is a negative influence, not really an influence, just a side effect, but unfortunately hand-drawn animation still did die out. The success of this movie, it won the Oscar, by the way, and a truckload of other awards internationally. It won the second ever animated feature Oscar. The first year, it was won by Shrek.
It will never totally die out, the same way stop-motion animation has never totally died out.
Or stop-motion lives on because you're still seeing it.
Oh, yeah.
Relatively often.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a niche thing now, like the new Wes Anderson movie that's coming out this year. I can't remember what it's called, but it has a dog on the cover. He's doing another stop motion.
Might be next year, actually.
Yeah, okay, you might be right. It's kind of like a niche, deliberate thing to do rather than kind of a genre, like animated films in general. Well, digitally animated films now are kind of a genre on their own. Classical animation is never going to completely go away.
It's mostly gone, though.
Yeah,
it's like film is still out there, and some of the filmmakers have enough power to keep on using it, like Tarantino. I think Spielberg's still a big film guy. Most people, in fact, are using digital now. And it's going to be fully gone one of these days. Like, not wearing helmets in hockey. It was grandfathered in for a long time. You'd see guys who didn't have to wear helmets, but eventually everyone had to. Well,
maniacs.
Film is going to be fully gone one day, and it'll be just digital. And hand-drawn animation, well, that actually might live on longer than film itself will, but that'll be so sparse and so
rare. I don't think it'll ever totally go away. I think there will always be, kind of like black and white cinematography, there will always be artists that just want to work in that medium, and there's a value to that medium. The difference between film and digital, to be honest, as a film fan, I can't tell the difference between something shot on film and something shot on digital. I think digital is as good as film now. Whereas you can totally tell the difference between classically drawn and digitally animated movies.
Look at the same time frame with Spirited Away versus Shrek and anything Pixar was doing. And I love Shrek.
Yeah, I don't devalue these films at all. I think they look beautiful. It's just in a different way. It's just a different style.
Mm. And in fairness, Spirited Away, as great as it is, I would rather watch the other ones I mentioned at the top of the podcast. Shrek, Nemo, Snow White, Inside Out, and Lion King more often than I watch Spirited Away.
I disagree. I tend to get easily bored with the formula of kids' movies.
And this is not formulaic, that's for sure.
Yeah.
All right, well, our voices have been going for a while here. No one's going to hear us coughing. We'll cut that out. Bev is dying with a cough right now. I'll keep talking while she coughs. We'll give you an actual sense of what we've been doing so much of the podcast that we'll actually make the final cut.
We cut them out, but there's been a lot of hacking.
All right, well, then final thoughts on Spirited Away. Or, I'll say it one more time, and find it here, Sen to Chihiro no Kamakakushi.
Well, on what you were saying earlier, just this conversation is honestly made me want to go back and watch the movie all over again. Considering the depth of Spirited Away, perhaps its greatest accomplishment is its watchability. Like, a film that by all rights should be an intellectual feast is instead richly emotionally rewarding. I do not like a lot of kids' films, but I find this one's just so beautiful and compelling.
And this wraps up the month of Bev. You chose 4 films, and a few of them, at least 3, were women, or in this case, girl-driven.
I didn't even realize until after I picked them. But I guess that makes sense. People are gonna be more drawn to films that have heroes that they can relate to. Which we talked about a lot in Kill Bill. That was the one where we really dug into the feminism of that.
Yeah, and Moonstruck was more even between men and women. There was probably a few more men than women in the whole cast, the major players.
But
you've got the 2 best characters that are women, Dukakis and Cher, and now a movie that's driven by a girl, and as you said, the bad guy, and then her twin sister.
There's at least as many female characters as there are male, and maybe a few more female that have, like, important speaking parts.
I like this movie a lot. I will watch it again. But as I said, I'll probably watch the other ones a little bit more often as the years go on. It's not one of those I'm going to just throw in on a Friday night for kicks, but it is a very good movie and it's certainly beautiful to look at. And you got to like some of the stuff that is teaching you a little bit of things, but not beating you over the head with it. And as for that feminist thing we just talked about, we're going to keep on that theme when we get into Oscar month, which is next week. So when you hammer that play button on the next 100 project in 7 days, we'll review another 2002 picture. In fact, 2002's best picture, according to the Academy Awards, Chicago.
And all that jazz.
2 leads are both bad guys, and they are ladies. So, the coming trash trivia for Chicago. Which 2 other Oscar winners for best picture were named after cities? I feel like I've asked that question before, maybe when one of the other ones came up on our podcast way back when, but that would be a long time ago, because I'll tell you right now, both of them are quite a few years ago.
Okay, because I'm drawing a blank right away. Oh, okay, I just thought of at least one. For you to find out the answer to that question, please tune in to next week's podcast for Chicago. And if you'd like more from Ryan and me, please check out our website, top100project.com. Don't forget to subscribe to the Top 100 Project on iTunes, and while you're there, check out our entire roster of podcasts. We've covered almost 200 movies now, including... Actually, we may have gotten up to 200.
Not quite.
Okay, all right, you let me know. So that almost 200 includes all 123 movies that made the AFI's 98 and 2007 lists of the best American films ever made. Every episode is available for free. While you're there enjoying all these episodes, rate us and review us. It helps people find us. And if you'd like to reach Ryan and me, we're both on Twitter. I'm at Bev Ellis Ellis, and Ryan is at MovieFiend51. And once more, we would like to thank our sponsor, Sparkplug Coffee.
Also, we haven't said this in a long time, but our email address, which we didn't keep promoting, but top900projectpodcast@gmail.com, because I guess email can be as easy as Twitter. Maybe people aren't Twitter.
I think it might be easier to reach us, because I think you can only message someone on Twitter if they're following you.
So maybe we start putting that in there. If you want to talk to us, and you should, let us know what you think about
our recent podcast. We really love hearing from you guys.
And by the way, Oscar month in February, we're going to do Chicago, we're going to do Terms of Endearment, and we're going to do an Oscars preview show again, and we'll have one other choice in there, which didn't win Best Picture, but we think should have. I certainly think should have, and we'll talk about that when we get closer to it. So my last word is to say, sayonara.
And cut.